Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
This is not a negotiation. I'm running this team because the Reinsdorfs want me to, and I'm going to run it that I think is best.
And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
I think your play is embarrassing. The pro player thing, this is basketball.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media. On Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Pet. And on Facebook, at Facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up? Welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio Tuesdays, Thursdays, Saturdays, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Matt, what's going on? Back from the weekend. It's Monday morning. It is freezing. It is snowing here in Chicago. And Matt, it feels like it's going to be Siberia of some sorts here in Chicago. And along with that, Another disappointing and depressing weekend of Chicago Bulls basketball. Some more injuries. Some just, I don't even know. Like, honestly, I don't know. I really don't know anymore. I keep saying this every single week that we talk about the Bulls, but I don't know. I really don't have any more answers. I don't.
It's brutal. The Bulls lost to maybe the only team worse than them in the league right now, the Cavs, at home. Some people might like that as far as tanking purposes go. But so the Bulls lose to the Cavs on Sunday to go 0-7 at home in the month of January, which is the first time the franchise has ever done that. Locked that many home games in 1 month. So there's that. We have another mishandled player injury with Chandler Hutchison in his toe, and we'll get to that. And Anthony Davis has made it official that he is requesting a trade from the Pelicans, and the Bulls have no hope of getting him. We'll get to that. Oh, and by the way, it's going to be minus 50 with the wind chill on Wednesday. So, yeah, tough times in Chicago.
So before we get to all of that, obviously, I told you guys I would deliver on a new intro. I want to give a quick shout-out to the mastermind behind the beats on our intro. So River Beats, go follow him on YouTube. Go give him a subscribe on YouTube. Fantastic underground beat maker. River Beats, again, on YouTube, on Instagram. Fantastic beat maker. Thank you again for allowing us to use that on our show here. Sets the tone for our show here, and we'll continue to set the tone until changes are made in Chicago here with this Bulls team specifically. Hopefully you guys enjoy the intro as much as we do, and obviously, like I told a lot of the people who've given us feedback here on the show, I won't let it go as long as it did, 6 months or so, with the reoccurring intro that we had from before. But again, thank you, at River Beats on YouTube. Check out all of his stuff on Instagram as well, at River Beats. But Matt, like you had mentioned, three big, very big storylines, the Clippers game and also the Cavs game from this weekend. We've got the Chandler Hutchison injury to talk about, and as well as this Anthony Davis news. Let's start with the Chandler Hutchison injury first, because the Atlanta loss happened. We found out that Hutchison was dealing with this injury to his right foot, and specifically a toe injury. And he played through it in the Clippers game, and you know, this is where things get kind of gray, and not many people knew if the medical staff wasn't aware of it, if Chandler Hutchison, you know, was dealing with it and he didn't really know about it and he thought it was more of just a jam and that was what the pain was. But nonetheless, he played 41 minutes in probably his best game as a Chicago Bull. And then sure enough, the pain worsened as the game ended. And he went to have x-rays, MRIs done, and sure enough, there was a hairline fracture in that right toe, put a boot on it, and now he's going to be out for an extended period of time. You know, this frustrates me more than anything else, and I think it comes on top of the Wendell Carter Jr. injury just a few weeks ago, where the initial diagnosis was fear that he was going to miss a certain amount of time, then it comes back day to day, and then he has to have surgery, which in short, is he's going to miss the rest of the season. So I think that's where all the anger for me builds up on top of every other injury the Bulls have had this season.
I mean, not necessarily. He is, what did they put the timeline of 2 to 4 weeks on it? And I know, you know, people...
No, I was talking about Carter's injury.
Oh, you're talking about Carter. Yes. So Carter...
Yeah, like the fact that he's going to miss the rest of this
season.
Right.
Which, you know, that is a bummer because I think one of the few things we maybe had left to look forward to was watching Wendell Carter Jr. play and finish what has been a pretty promising rookie season. And it sounds like that's not going to happen now. Hutchison will only be out 2 to 4 weeks based on the timeline they gave us. And we know that this team can be misleading, parentheses Denzel Valentine, with their timelines and diagnoses of their players when they're hurt. So who knows? They may get to a point where Chandler Hutchison's toe feels fine and the doctors clear him to play. And it's, you know, late February, and the Bulls say, is it worth it to put that kid out there? As you said, he had one of his better games of the season against the Hawks on Friday night. It was his first double-double of his career. And he had, and it wasn't just that game. He's been playing well since the Bulls put him in Justin Holiday's starting spot. So I wouldn't be opposed to him coming back and getting some more run and some more minutes before this season ends. And I know a lot of Bulls fans are saying, dude, just shut everybody down. This season is a gigantic disaster. Just shut everybody down. We're trying to lose anyway. What's the point? And I can see, you know, I can see your reasoning for that. I can't argue that. The part about the Hutchison stuff that to me is so glaringly hard to listen to is Boylan's comments made about it. And the fact that he was praising Hutch for being a tough kid and wanting to get out there and play. And, oh, it's, you know, the kid's got heart and he's a starter in the NBA. This is his dream to be playing. So, of course, he wants to get out there and play and he wants to play through it. And he told me he could play through it. Okay. So it's not all on Boylan and his staff to say, why the heck did you let this kid play 41 minutes the game after he hurt himself? Because it sounds like Hutchison was not aware of how serious it was and he just wanted to play. Okay, fine. But for Boylan to praise this kid's toughness with all of the other Jim Boylan says stuff nonsense that we've had to listen to, it feeds into a narrative right now that is very irresponsible and does not benefit the team in any way. You're trying to be this hard-nosed coach who's praising toughness, and it could have been so much worse. Like, you know, Hutchison could have broken his foot or a toe in a way that was much more severe than the, you know, the minimal fracture we're dealing with now. It is irresponsible for them to have let him play. And Hutch is just a rookie trying to go out there and prove himself. So you can't put that responsibility on him. That responsibility lies with his coach, the medical and training staff, and this organization. And that, to me, is why Boylan's comments were so unnerving.
The one thing that also bothers me, I think, a little bit here is we're not doctors. None of us are. 95-98% of the people on Twitter aren't doctors. None of us have the medical information of Chandler Hutchison. So, you know, for all of us to throw blame at the medical staff, I can understand the frustration and, you know, the things that the history of the Bulls medical staff isn't great. I understand that. So everything that's led up to this point, can understand the frustration. But we have to understand too, like Hutch didn't know that he had a hairline fracture in his foot after the Atlanta game. You know, he purely thought that this was just soreness, that this was part of the game. So the fact that he went through practice and that he went through training, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, like leading up to Friday, like all of that, he thought he was just playing on sore feet. This was just part of being in the NBA. And they did all, like the Bulls said that they did everything that they were supposed to do. And maybe they did, maybe they didn't, but we have to believe that at face value, right? And part of this too is the medical staff and the training staff, I think, you know, there's a tug of war going on here because of patient confidentiality too. Some of this information can't be shared by both sides. So that's something else I think a lot of us have to remember too. But in the same sense is, you know, the medical staff gives Jim Boylan the players that are allowed to play and aren't allowed to play. But if there is some pain and discomfort that's going on with Hutch, like even out of a lot of precaution, if Hutch is feeling uncomfortable, Shouldn't you sit him out for a game just in case?
Yeah.
Just in case something's going on.
For your team that has 11 wins in late January? Right. Yes, obviously. they should have sat him. And to me, like, you know, you're saying maybe, you know, we're not doctors, we don't know everything that the people within the organization know. Okay, fine, fair. But yes, they should have sat him. And the thing that to me is the worrisome thing is that Boylan went out there to the media and explained what happened and was praising Hutch for his toughness. Oh, you know, I'm proud of Hutch. He wanted to play. Guess what? Do you think, and like, I'm not saying this is a guarantee, I'm just saying maybe this is something that went through Chandler Hutchison's mind. If Fred Hoiberg, player-friendly players coach Fred Hoiberg, was still here coaching and Hutch felt some kind of nagging soreness in his toe, do you think he would have gone to Fred and or the medical staff to say, hey, man, something's not right with my toe after that Atlanta game. Let's get this checked out. Or here we are in the present and real time. Jim Boylan is the coach. Jim Boylan is running his mouth nonstop to the media about his players being embarrassingly lacking in effort and toughness and heart and spirit and insert ridiculous intangible adjective here. Maybe Hutch said, you know what, I can play through this, I'm fine, because of all of the scrutiny and scorn that he and his fellow young teammates have had to listen to from his nincompoop running his mouth to the media about the team not being tough enough. Does Hutchison say something if Fred is coaching this team instead of Boylan? Because he's, in that scenario, not afraid to be labeled not tough enough. To me, that is a very real hypothetical that has to be addressed, and it's one of the many reasons why Boylan needs to go. Like, I'm sorry, kid. It's not toughness because, oh, I feel like my coach wants toughness. I got to get out there and play. No, it's irresponsible. It could have been so much worse than it is.
I agree with you. And my thing is if Hutch was sitting in the training room too and saying, like, no, I'm good to go. Like, if you guys aren't seeing anything initially when you were doing all these tests, then I'm good to go. Like, it's just soreness. I'm cool. And going through all of these, going through training, going through practices, and I'm sore, but it's fine. I'm good to go. I want to play. Then they have to take him for his word too. But I agree with your comments about Boylan too. Is like, this isn't Game 7 of the NBA Finals. The Bulls aren't playing for anything. So in that sense too, you got to save your young guys. And like, these injuries stacking up too could have consequences down the line. So I agree too with you. Like, let me read the quote from Boylan for our listeners who didn't get a chance to read this. So this comes from Boylan from Cody Westerlin. This guy wants to play, man. He's a starter in the NBA. It's his dream. Obviously, he could function with it. I give him credit for the toughness to fight through. Again, he had a double-double, played his most minutes of the season, jumping over the rim, grabbing rebounds. Obviously, during the game, it wasn't bothering him. And then afterwards, it's sore. We x-rayed it, and we move on. That's part of me that likes him. You understand what I'm saying? I grew up in the old days. I can't get into all the stories because they're not for the public record. Where guys, they're going to play hurt, they're going to play. Now, we want to understand what's going on with our guys, and we do. And this is a unique injury in a unique place that obviously didn't affect his play, but after his play was sore. I kind of equate it to if you ever had Oshkosh as a kid. Isn't that the thing in your shins?
Oshkosh.
That's
Oshkosh. It's a shin and knee pain, yeah.
So when you were playing, it didn't bother you. When you got done playing, it hurts. We all live that. I'm proud of Hutch.
Hey, pal. You just blowing from stupid town?
I'm with you. I'm with you, Matt. I understand you have to play with certain levels of soreness and pain, and you can't be babied every single step of the way, but a hairline fracture in the toe is a lot different than just playing with general soreness.
Yeah. And honestly, like, that's why it was so frustrating to hear Boylan say that stuff. And some of the other stuff he was saying that you didn't include in that quote right there was talking about in the old days and, oh my, you know, some of the things that we used to play through and guys used to play through and blah, blah, blah. Like, providing vague examples and even saying, well, I can't tell you some of the specific stories because, you know, I'd get in trouble, whatever. But, like, trying to, like, continue this caricature of toughness and grit. And saying, oh, Chandler playing with a, you know, what we thought was just like a bruised toe or a jammed toe. Oh, that's nothing. Imagine some of the stuff that, you know, we used to play with and play through back in the day. It's like, dude, What are you trying to prove here, Jim Boylan? That back in the day, guys were tough and would play through injuries, and that's why you're proud of your rookie for trying to do the same? It's 2019, dude. Wake the fuck up. Wake the fuck up. You sound like an old man sitting on your front porch just yelling about, oh, back in my day, we used to do this and play that. These millennial softies are, you know, ruining the game with their lack of heart and spirit. Like, dude, shut up. Just shut up.
Back to the medical staff for a second. Like, I was telling Josh Lloyd on Locked On NBA yesterday when he had me on really quick just to talk about this injury and the Wendell Carter Jr. injury specifically. Is you take this incident in an isolated factor, okay? You know, you give the medical staff the benefit of the doubt. But you stack up all of the injuries over the last 3 years. You stack them over 5 years, 10 years. You talk about the way that injuries have kind of been botched. I mean, you combine all of those factors and you've got to start asking some questions. Matt, I asked you back in October, you know, about Valentine's injury. I asked the same question in November. I said, when do people start asking questions? I asked the same thing in the middle of December. When do we start asking questions? For Carter's injury 2 weeks ago, I asked the same thing. When does anybody start asking some questions? I know some of these injuries happen in game, like you had said, and some of this just it's freak injuries, and it happens in every NBA game. But when do we start asking actual questions about what's going wrong and why are these guys all getting hurt? And why are these diagnoses being changed all the time? And what's going on? Because this doesn't, where does this happen in the NBA to all of these guys and so frequently? Does it happen to any other NBA teams? Point me in the direction of any other NBA team that this happens so frequently to. That's what I want to know. Because I can't point to one. Can you?
I mean, no, really can't. Somebody was asking me the other day, like, maybe it's just that it's the immediacy and in our faceness of, this is the franchise we pay attention to daily, hourly, up to the minute, so that it is more fresh in our minds all of the different times that this team and one of its important players or quasi-important players has suffered some kind of injury. And on top of that, we get multiple updates about the injury and how it's worse than originally reported or diagnosed. It's both of the things, right? It's the frequency of injured players and the frequency at which there's some kind of weird story attached to, oh, this player's injured and it's not what we thought it was initially. That's why it's gross, and that's why it's so frustrating to fans, and that's why there are constantly fans saying, what's up with this team's medical staff? Like, do we need to fire Jeff Tanaka and overhaul this entire system? And, you know, my answer to that would be, yeah, maybe. Because what's working or what's not working right now is not working right now. So maybe hire new people and try something different. Because taking it, you know, zooming out and looking around across the league and trying to come up with examples of any other team out there that has suffered this consistency of injuries and the consistency of injury X is different than we initially thought injury X was. So usually that's bad news. Sorry. No, that stuff is not happening at this rate across other teams in the league. So something's going on, and they need to do something about it.
You know, we talk about the... You can talk about the cases with, like, Nico Mirotic. You can talk about Luol Deng's injury. I mean, talk about any case you want to talk about.
How about Bobby Portis playing, like, the entire back half of a season with a broken foot and not telling anyone about it?
The burns on top of his foot. The third-degree burns he was playing with because... Think about it.
Burns.
Let's go back for a second with that. Why did he play with the burns on top of his foot and not tell anybody? Because remember, they traded the only other person that plays that same position because they were pushing for a playoff spot at that time, aka Taj Gibson. The Bulls didn't have another power forward on the roster at the time. So he needed to play. So he didn't tell anybody. Now he won't say that. Nobody else will come out and say that, but that's true. Go back and look at that roster. Go back and look. More recent of a case, Paul Zipser. We can make all the jokes about him as we want, but
Paul Zipser, who we're high on.
He said he needed surgery. He could play through it, but he said he needed surgery. He came all the way to the end of the season, had surgery, and what happened? He went back, got the surgery, and got waived in the summer. And now where is he? He's on a two-way contract with the Nets. And he said it overseas in Germany that he needed the surgery, and that his doctors, that he went and saw specialists, that he needed it. There's little cases that all add up. So, like, those are just two examples recently. And there's even more than that. So, yeah, the Hutchinson injury just blows my mind, Matt. And it adds up. Every single person on this team that is of significance has had a major injury. Chris Dunn, Wendell Carter Jr., Lauri Markkanen, Zach LaVine. Zach LaVine, I mean, he's only missed 5 games. But
yeah, I wouldn't call Zach LaVine major. Yeah, he had a sprained ankle and missed a handful of games. But even still.
You go down the list of guys.
Go down the roster, and it's pretty much everybody. Hey, Blakeney's been healthy all season long. Cristiano Felicio has been healthy all season long.
Yeah, somebody needs to ask Robin Lopez how he's been able to sustain health throughout his entire tenure with this Bulls team.
Seriously.
But yeah, it's unfortunate for a guy who, since Justin Holiday has been traded, Hutch has stepped into a role and actually given something and looked like a guy that's taken at number 22, has proven something. You know, I'm not saying he's going to be a superstar of any caliber or whatever, but he's shown us at least something. So it's definitely a blow. And look, 2 to 4 weeks from now, when he's got the boot off of him, he's being reevaluated. We don't even know if he'll be able to get back out on the floor. We got to hope that this heals. He could be in 4 weeks. He could be reevaluated and potentially need surgery. So that's not out of the case. That's not off the books yet and out of the possibility yet. So we'll keep our eyes on that. But yeah, man, that was totally mind-blowing. Let's get on to these games, though. Let's get on to the Clippers in the Cavs game. So from Friday night, Matt, a lot of Bulls fans, I don't know, some of the optimists out there, I don't know how many of those are left from this season specifically, the ones holding on to this idea of tanking. And real quick about the tank, I know a lot of Bulls fans who are paying attention understand the new lottery rules, and I appreciate those who do, because there is an 86% chance that even if the Bulls do end up with the number one slot in the lottery, you still have only a 14% chance of getting the number one pick and an 86% chance of not landing that spot. But there's still writers saying that this is pro-tank. Yeah.
And even like nearly a 50-50 chance of falling out of the top four, which is the really scary part.
They battled against a Clippers team who was playing their third game in 4 nights. They were stuck in traffic for almost 2 hours before the game. They were missing, 4 players who didn't end up playing in this game, and both teams just played, I thought, in my opinion, awful. Chandler Hutchinson had a pretty decent game, but in another case where the Bulls couldn't close out a game against a Clippers team who's battling for a playoff spot. I thought it was a little bit of an improvement, but not by much. It wasn't by much. So, I mean, we can say this game was close, but to me, it was just another one of those blah kind of games with a team that came in and knew that it was kind of an off
night. Yeah, I mean, you said third game in 4 nights on the road, fourth game in 6 nights on the road. This was a very road-weary team, the Clippers that arrived. And as you said, like, barely made it to the UC in time for tip-off because of traffic in that blizzard. So, yeah, I mean, people were trying to give the Bulls a little bit of credit for hanging in there with a Western Conference team that's above 500. Okay, fine. But, you know, as you said, like, both teams started this game shooting pretty terribly. The Bulls, like, you know, LaVine put up 29. Bobby had 18. Like, but, I mean, like, what? Like, Tobias Harris and Lou Williams combined for 60. Lou Williams had a 30-point triple-double off the bench. There's not a whole lot that you can positively take away from this game other than, hey, guess, you know, Jabari Parker came off the bench, played very efficient minutes, 12 points in the first half on 5 of 7 shooting, and then just kind of disappeared in the second half. I don't know what that's about. But it's Look, and as you said, this was a game that was close late and winnable. This game and the Cavs game, and we'll, you know, we could talk about whether or not the Bulls and Cavs were trying to out-tank each other yesterday, but failure to execute down the stretch. Anytime the Bulls are in a close game this season, they seem to lose them, you know, save a couple of victories, because this team can't execute down the stretch. Some of that's these players who are making poor decisions on the floor and are not good and are not clutch, and some of it is the things that their coaches are drawing up for them. And, you know, we saw it against the Clippers on Friday, and we saw it again against the Cavs on Sunday. This team cannot execute down the stretch at all.
All I needed to hear was a triple-double off the bench from Lou Williams. That's all I needed to hear. How do you let a guy get a 31-point triple-double off the bench in 32 minutes? That's what I want to know. 31 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists.
Like, look, Lou Williams
right.
is no scrub.
I'm not
Lou Williams is a perennial six-man of the year candidate, but still, it's a bad look when you give up that kind of stat line to a guy coming off the bench.
And I hate to say this, too, but all that cap space that the Bulls have, you got a pretty good look at a guy that I think might end up in a Chicago Bulls uniform with all that cap space in this offseason.
Are you talking about Pat Beverly or Tobias Harris?
Tobias Harris.
Bulls can't get him.
You don't think so?
No. I know that he is a really popular name on Bulls Twitter right now because he would be a great fit for this roster. And that's not untrue. That is very true. I would love for Tobias Harris to come in and play for this team and be a great role player for this team and maybe even something slightly above a role player. But here's the catch, though. Everyone's talking about Tobias Harris because they see him as a attainable target, because we all know KD's not coming here, Kawhi's not coming here, Klay's not coming here, Kemba's not coming here. That's a lot of K's. But guess what? That's the top-tier free agents in 2019. None of them are coming here. We'll get to Anthony Davis in a bit. Sign and trade, just a straight-up trade. Nope, he's not coming here either, and we'll get to that. People see Tobias as an attainable target. But because there are plenty of teams out there that will swing and miss on all of those top-tier free agents this summer, Tobias Harris is not just a very juicy-looking target for the Bulls. He's a juicy-looking target for all of the teams who will be out of the market for the top tier and wanting to add what we would call immediately second tier. And Tobias Harris is one of those players. So Tobias Harris, assuming he keeps having the season he's having, is playing himself out of the Bulls' reach. Assuming there are multiple teams interested in Tobias Harris, the Bulls will not land his
service.
I hate
to tell you, too, he also doesn't play small forward. He doesn't play the wing position. He's with the Clippers, he's played almost all of his minutes at the four. So, like, I know in small, like, if the Bulls are trying to go small, which is absolutely laughable right now with what they're doing with Boylan, because that's complete opposite of it, and I know Boylan might be out, whatever, but I don't even want to think about those possibilities right now because this is just a total disaster. But the realistic option here is he's been better when he plays in a small front court, when he plays the four. And that's, he can't do that if you've got Markkanen here. And I don't know what they're doing with Bobby, and I don't know what they're doing with Parker right now. So, like you said, and if he gets a max, and that's exactly what I thought we didn't want to do, is the second tier free agents. But
and I think it's pretty likely he's getting a max. Like he's
yeah,
still young.
I agree too.
He's in his mid-20s. This is his big contract moment, right? This is his best.
There's a decent amount of teams with money too.
Yeah, and plenty of teams with money. All of these teams' 2016 bad deals are coming off the books if they aren't already. Lots of teams with money. Tobias Harris is going to get a max or close to it, and I don't think he's signing that here.
I was just disappointed with, just to finish up that Clippers game really quick, I was just disappointed, and I mean, it can go up to schemes, it can go up to the way that the Bulls have played in the last fourth quarters, and look, I was listening to, I don't know why I was doing this, maybe it was for our intro or whatever, but I was listening to what Jim Boylan wanted to improve in the first day he was hired as head coach, and one of the first things that he talked about was improving the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter and when the Bulls were staying in games, and talking about getting 50-50 balls and improving on staying in those games and flipping the script on winning games. This was another classic game of the Bulls couldn't figure out how to close games. And, you know, Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen all have spoken, and Wendell Carter Jr. too, before he got hurt, all spoke about how when they get down and they watch other teams knock down multiple shots in a row, they all feel like they have to do something. They all feel like they individually have to come back and do it themselves. And I felt like this was another classic case against the Clippers on Friday night. And it quickly soured, and the Clippers came back, and the Bulls struggled to find buckets late and struggled to find ways to close out against a team that was just basically dogging it the entire night, and a team that was missing important pieces to this team. Like, Avery Bradley was starting, and Patrick Beverley was out there starting. Two guys, and Marcin Gortat, three guys that are not offensive weapons. And you still managed to lose to the Clippers.
Well,
like that.
Talking about,
you know,
Jim Boylan wanting to improve this team's execution down the stretch. And you look at that Clippers game specifically. In the last, you know, handful of exchanges of possessions, you had Markkanen actually being aggressive, trying to be aggressive, which we've been harping on him for, getting blocked by Pat Beverley. Little Pat Beverley blocked Markkanen at the rim, which is embarrassing. And it, to me, when we watched the replay, no foul. Markkanen got cleanly blocked by tiny little Pat Beverley. The Clippers go down and score on an easy Beverley runner in the lane when, guess what? The Bulls' defensive breakdown was laughably bad. Nobody came over to help. Then LaVine airballs a three. And then the Bulls give up an alley-oop to the Clippers. That is the sequence of plays that we saw to close that game. And Boylan's talking about improving execution late. It's laughable. Absolutely laughable.
Let's get on to the Cavs game really fast. And then we'll talk about Anthony Davis really quick before we get out of here. This is just, I mean, like I said on Martin Luther King Day last week, if you went to that Cavs game, same thing with yesterday's game, you deserve a refund if you went to this game. This was just absolutely pathetic. I don't know if you want this team to tank, like to lose to a Cavaliers team who's historically bad. It's laughable because the Cavaliers were trying to lose this game. They pulled Jordan Clarkson out of the fourth quarter, who was having a really good game. He was 8 for 11 in this game with 18 points, 7 rebounds, and 6 assists. And they still couldn't do enough to lose this game. The Cavaliers pulled this game off 104-101. Like, coming into this game, I'm pretty sure the Bulls and the Cavs combined to lose 30 out of their last 32 games combined together. Like this was just laughably bad.
God, that's bad.
Matt, I will say this. That last play where Chris Dunn came down with the ball, that was just inexcusable.
And Dunn across the timeline with 13. Dunn down the lane. Shot wild, no. And the rebound is it. They get it to Dellavedova,
wow.
And he's fouled.
What are we doing?
And Chris is looking puzzled.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know if that was the play asked by Jim Boylan for him to run. Look, Chris Dunn beats whoever was guarding Rodney Hood on a nice little dribble move, but the finishing was just inexcusable. Like, a bank off the rim that didn't even... bank off the backboard that didn't even touch the rim. You had so much time to set up and develop a play to your two other guys who have been pretty decent in clutch time, in Markkanen and LaVine. Like, their usage rating, thanks to Mark Strotman, who tweeted this out, like, LaVine and Markkanen's usage rating in clutch time this year has been, what, around 15%? That's embarrassingly low for two guys that should be shooting way more when it comes down to that.
Yeah.
To less than five minutes.
Usage in clutch time is around 15%, actually slightly higher.
Robin Lopez. That's pathetic.
Robin freaking Lopez. I mean, we went through the final few plays in the Clippers game. Let's do it with the Cavs game. You said, you know, Dunn's drive with the Bulls' second to last possession. He did get to the lane. Boylan said in his postgame comments, you know, Markkanen and LaVine were both being face guarded. We were trying to get either of them to come open off a screen, but, you know, it didn't work. I was happy with the fact that Dunn got to the lane. He said, you know, we were there. We had a look at the rim to win the game, and it didn't go in. To me, that is Boylan glossing over what was a really ugly attempt by Dunn. Like, he tried to throw it glass lefty as he was, like, flying through the lane right to left. It was not a good look at the rim. It was a poor excuse for what Boylan called a look at the rim to win the game. And, I mean, and then, like, Boylan also called it, like, you know, there's the play to win the game. There were two more possessions after that, Jim Boylan. Like, what are you talking about? After that, you went down and, so, the Bulls committed a foul. Dele sinks two free throws. And then you have an inbounds play for Zach LaVine, where LaVine actually gets a pretty good look at a three, and he misses it. So, you know, before the Dunn thing, they gave a very wide open look to Alec Burks, you know, made like a baseline jumper from like 10 feet. Could not have been more open. Like, were it not for a miracle Wayne Selden three, the possession or two before that, the Bulls would have not even been in the position to win the game with the Chris Dunn possession. So, late game execution, utter failure once again. And who knows, maybe Boylan and his bosses really wanted to lose this game. But based on what we heard from Boylan afterwards...
Yeah, I don't believe that for a second.
No. He wanted to win that game, and he praised Chris Dunn. He said, I'm proud of Chris for getting to the lane and getting a look like that. Really? You're proud of him? He missed it. He missed it. What are you proud of?
Last year, I think about back to last year, that shot Chris Dunn hits. No doubt about it. Chris Dunn hits that shot last year. This year, he has no confidence. You look at the way he's playing, he has no confidence. And that's what I think Chris Dunn's game is built off of. You know, I think about back to when we talked to Casey Johnson last week, and he said maybe that's what Chris Dunn's game is built off of, you know? And maybe that's true. And without that, this is what we're going to get. Maybe that's just what the fact is. And a lot of Bulls fans now, I can see it. I see the writing on the wall. It's been there for a while now, are completely out on him. And look, I'm cool with the idea of packaging him in a trade and seeing what you have. And that goes for anybody on this roster, man. Nobody's off the table for me at this point. Carter and Markkanen, I'm fine with maybe keeping them off to the side unless it's for a superstar that's going to sign an extension to stay here. But outside of that, everybody's on the table for me. And even those two guys, like, even those two guys are on the table at this point. I'm so sick of watching this.
Yeah.
Everybody's on the table for me.
There's the Bulls have a lot of decisions facing them coming up to this deadline. And then based on those decisions, again, coming into this summer, they have a lot of hard realities to face. And I don't think there's a single piece of this roster as currently constructed that they should deem untouchable. I really don't.
But it was good that, you know, Jim Boylan ran the offense through Robin Lopez in the first quarter. So that was sick to watch. You know, let's.
That's why I'm saying I'm glad that they lost to Cleveland. I know, as you were just saying, there's still, even if the Bulls land the worst record, or, you know, even make sure that they get one of the three worst records, there's still an 86% chance that they don't land the number one pick, which is important for a couple of reasons, and we'll get to AD in a second. But to me, watching this team try to play what you can't even really call basketball or modern basketball under Jim Boylan is meaningless. Player development, don't talk to me about that. It's not happening right now. They're regressing, which is why, sad as it is, I'm thrilled that they lost yesterday. I'm thrilled that they found a way to lose, because sweeping Cleveland to say, unfortunately, maybe the Bulls wind up at four instead of in the top three come ping pong ball time. I know it's not much, but the one thing I know is that I would rather have a 14% chance at number one than a 12.5% chance, which is where they would be if they finished with the fourth worst record instead of one of the three worst records. That, to me, right now, is more important than any kind of quote-unquote development or growth that we can see under Jim Boylan. That's how strongly I feel about it. 1.5% chance increase at the number one pick, to me, is more important than seeing any kind of wins or growth under Boylan. It's gross reality, but that's the reality I'm looking at.
If we're going to pick up wins, I'd rather pick up wins against better teams. to me, I would rather take a quality win than a win over the worst team ever in the NBA, ever in history.
Agree. What does beating Cleveland four times give you? Absolutely nothing. It gives you a lot of joke fodder. That's it.
The last thing, and then it brings me back to the point of, you know, when Darnell had asked Jim Boylan what he thinks he was doing to that he feels that this coaching staff was on the right track, and then he went back and name dropped the Cleveland win. That pissed me off. And then I look at this like, this is just, there you go. You can bask in the fact that you got blown out by an Atlanta team that has four more wins than you do, and then you just lost to a Cleveland team who is going to go down as historically one of the worst teams in all of basketball. One bright spot of this game, Matt, and I can't even believe that there is one, but there is. Wayne Selden, I thought he played good again. And like I said, the only bright spot of this season has been that Justin Holiday trade. And I know fans are tweeting at me, stop talking about the Justin Holiday trade. It's not a bright spot. It was a marginal trade at best. 2 second-round picks in a Wayne Selden who, you know, could be something, maybe isn't, but he had another nice performance. 6 for 8, 15 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal, and a block, and only 1 turnover, was +7 in the plus-minus. Played 38 minutes, so good for Wayne Selden Jr. I don't know what he's going to be, but if he stacks performances like that, hell, he could be cheap and be brought back as another guy that you can take a look at next year, so... Good for Wayne Selden.
Kind of puts things in perspective, doesn't it? When the team's bright spot from a loss to Cleveland is a half-season loner that came over in a trade where you got rid of a guy to get a couple of second-round picks. That is all kinds of sad, man.
All right. Last thing to do on the show today, this Anthony Davis news. We talked about it. I don't know. It's been like about 3 weeks since we talked about it. You can go back and listen to that episode. It's available at LockedOnBulls.com. Go back through our feed. If you're a relatively new listener to the show or you just missed that episode, we talked in length about, you know, what the window is, if there's, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel is getting smaller and smaller on that idea, that pipe dream. Anthony Davis has requested a trade now. It came out via Woj from ESPN. We knew this was coming. We were just saying we were sitting back and waiting for this idea of this to happen. Matt, I already tweeted it out this morning. Without a guarantee of an extension, the Bulls shouldn't... You can pick up the phone, but without that guarantee of an extension and the idea that Anthony Davis could potentially walk in 2020 if you do trade for him with the Bulls... Like rolling the dice on that could set your franchise back another 5 years. And if you do trade for Anthony Davis, like the Garn Packs are going to get a pat on the back from Jerry Reinsdorf and Michael Reinsdorf. That could be the savior on top of the number one pick this summer that saves them for another decade. Is that what Bulls fans want? I'm seriously asking. I'm not telling you how to feel or what you want to be, what you want to happen, but seriously asking Bulls fans, is that what you want?
Well,
I'm seriously asking.
Just to clarify, if you said on top of getting AD and number one pick, the Bulls aren't getting...
You have to include that pick.
Right, exactly. The Bulls, there's no way the Bulls keep the lottery pick they're aiming towards right now and somehow get Anthony Davis. That's not happening. The whole thing about guaranteeing, you know, coming to terms with the player about, yes, I'm going to stay here. I'm going to re-sign with you guys once I get traded to your organization. The Bulls just saw Jimmy Butler do the dirty to the Wolves and not make any promises about an extension with them and then demand a trade. So that is fresh in their minds. They know that Anthony Davis could do exactly the same thing to them. The Anthony Davis camp is saying it's mostly about getting... You know, getting to a place where I can compete consistently, compete for championships consistently. That's not happening here. In even the wildest scenarios where the Bulls just give the Pelicans everything for AD, including the pick, Markkanen, Wendell, LaVine, just, you know, take your pick, all of it even. Then basically you are putting Anthony Davis on a roster that has nothing around him and would be... At best, what the Pelicans are now, which is not enough to keep Anthony Davis happy. So what's the end goal there, really and truly? The other real harsh reality you have to face is that this is a scripted, predetermined play from AD's new agent, Rich Paul, who, yep, guess what? We all know it, is also LeBron James's agent. LeBron's not too happy in LA right now. He wants his coach gone. He wants a better cast of players and a fellow all-star to join him on that team. This is all about the Lakers getting AD or taking their best shot at AD. This update we got this morning from Woj. Because the Celtics are the other big player for AD. People are saying Knicks, but I don't think they're a real player. It's the Celtics, right? They've got a lot of young talent and a lot of draft picks that they could throw at the Pelicans. But they can't do it until July 1st because Kyrie Irving is currently on the Rose deal, what they call the Rose deal, you know, the max extension off of a rookie contract that allows a player to eat 30% instead of 25% of the team's overall salary cap space, which is from the 2011 CBE or CBA. Anthony Davis is on the very same deal. There is also a clause in that CBA element of the Rose contract that prohibits a team from having two players or more on that same kind of contract on the same team at any given time. So until they restructure Kyrie or Kyrie leaves, the Celtics can't get AD onto that roster, meaning this is the Lakers' best shot and they know it. Because if the Lakers try to convince the Pelicans to deal AD now, then they eliminate Boston from the competition. And it's a smart move from Rich Paul, and it's Rich Paul's best card to play to come get AD to play with the Lakers, which, by the way, if AD wants winning, come to the team that has LeBron, and all of a sudden you're in a lot better situation than you ever were in New Orleans.
A couple other things to consider here really fast. If Anthony Davis truly wanted to play in Chicago, he wouldn't have signed with Clutch Sports. He would have signed with Priority Sports. There's one.
Laughable, but continue.
Two, what you mentioned.
I'm with you, and there's no way that AD would have done that.
So just some things to consider here. The other thing too, you mentioned Boston. Yeah, if the Pelicans want to hold out on this entire thing and get the best assets that they can in return, they can hold out until the summer, say bye-bye to Kyrie, and, you know, leverage between Boston and LA. And find out what they can do between those two teams. Look, the Bulls would be sitting maybe third in the pecking order, maybe. Like, Boston has got several first round picks on top of all the talent that they have on their roster. The Bulls are far and away third in that line, and probably even maybe even third at best. Here's from Brad Turner on Twitter. It says, hearing from sources verified on Twitter, he is. He covers the Lakers, got 21,000, works for the LA Times. This was this morning. He said, hearing from sources, if Lakers want Anthony Davis, who has requested a trade, LA has to start the deal at Lonzo Ball, Kyle Kuzma, Ivaka Zubac, and their number one pick. They're also saying sources say that Brandon Ingram could be included in that deal as well. So if that's truly what wants to be happened, I don't know why the Lakers wouldn't just hit send immediately, send in the deal and let it be done.
Immediately, because then guess what? You have a team with LeBron and AD on it, and they play for the same agent who will has not only gotten LeBron to sign long-term to be with that Lakers team, but can now also get AD to sign long-term to play with that team. And guess what? If you have LeBron and AD together, yeah, LeBron's aging a little bit, but we all thought Father Time applied to everyone. It may not apply to him. We're now seeing him endure what is honestly like the biggest injury of his entire career, this groin injury that's caused him to miss like a month or so now. But he's still LeBron freaking James, and AD's only 25. That is a scenario where other very talented players across the league will say, you know what? I might take a little bit less money to go play with that team because that team can win titles. The Bulls have no such offer that they can provide to AD and his agency. None. Which is why, like, I've been seeing C Red Fred, our pal, on Twitter all morning talking about, oh, the Bulls can beat that offer. The Bulls can beat that offer. The Lakers offer isn't that impressive. What are the It's irrelevant, buddy. Anyone who's in Fred's camp who's driving themselves crazy trying to come up with all the best ways that the Bulls can put the best offer on the table for AD, stop doing this to yourself. It's irrelevant. not going to happen because AD doesn't want to come here. Sad but true. AD doesn't want to come here.
And look,
stop giving yourselves gray hairs.
He might love Chicago. And here's another route that we talked about 3 weeks ago, Matt. I said this to you. His best opportunity is to win now, right? And if that means, you know, people have talked to me and already tweeted at me this morning, you know, if nobody's beating the Warriors, then why not just stay in the place that he is and make all the money that he can? Well, who's the only person that has gone to a team that's beaten the Warriors so far? It's been LeBron. So his best opportunity is to go pair with the greatest player we've seen since Michael Jordan. So that opportunity is there. So he would do that. That makes sense. Go and play in LA and make all that money. AD can still come to Chicago. It doesn't have to be right now. And you know what happens to a lot of those stars that Chicago wants? They come here on the tail end of their prime or in their vet years. And Anthony Davis can still do that when he's 32 years old.
Yeah.
So, you know, when he's off
maybe,
that contract.
Maybe that's when, he switches agencies and goes and signs up with Priority Sports. Hey, they're really good at getting hometown Chicago kids more money than they deserve.
Like, I'm not trying to
Jabari Parker.
I'm not trying to be a dick here, and I'm not trying to be a smartass, but that's the reality here, is that in when he's 31, 32, 33...
36-year-old Anthony Davis can come play in Chicago for a couple of seasons and make $70 million.
That's the reality that we're facing right now, is he doesn't want to be stuck on a team that isn't going to win. And he wants to win. He's said that multiple times. And his best opportunity to do that is either go to Boston or go play with LeBron in LA. And it's clear. He signed with Clutch Sports. He wants to go play with LeBron in LA. And if he doesn't find a way to do that in a trade, then hold out till 2020 and do it in free agency. Simple as that.
It's not hard to read between the lines. It's right in front of our faces. This is a play made by the Lakers and Rich Paul to give that team the best chance and the best opportunity right now to get AD away and to keep him away from Boston. That's what's happening right now. And the Bulls are nowhere even remotely involved in what's going on right now.
Bulls are picking up the phone right now. They probably picked up the phone and called. And I don't know who the GM of the Pelicans is, but they're getting the phone and they see it on their iPhone. And, you know, the GM's running to the office of their scouts and other people that, you know, sit in on these trade meetings. They're like, oh, come to the meeting room, come to the meeting room. Bulls front office is calling. They put it on speakerphone and they're all trying to hold back their laughs on trying to formulate a trade for the Bulls. Like, that's where we're at right now.
All morning on Twitter, I've been seeing Bulls fans on Twitter being like, well, you know, you package this, you package that, you package the number one. Pump the brakes, people. Do we all know that we don't have the number one pick yet?
Right.
That is the only way that this Bulls package would get closer. Not,
you would have to hope
not close
that
enough.
Don't
I'm
deal
saying closer
the
is if they do, in fact, get lucky and get that number one pick, and you can get the number one pick, which means de facto Zion Williamson. Then you offer Zion Williamson and Lowry or Zach or Wendell. You know, then all of a sudden that package to the Pelicans looks a lot better. But that only happens if the Pelicans wait until this summer. And the Bulls are one of several teams, not just the Lakers right now, that can offer. And then guess what? By that time, the Celtics are now in play. The Lakers are still very much in play and still want him. And you still have the issue of getting a commitment from AD to sign long term. Even if the Bulls get the number one pick, which some Bulls fans on Twitter are talking about as a given right now, which it is not. No way the Pelicans take that Bulls pick without knowing first what it is, because it could fall out of the top four. It could fall out of the top five. It's gross, right, but true. So no, stop. Stop. I feel like anyone who's coming to me over the next, you know, couple of days, as long as AD hasn't yet been traded with Bulls hypotheticals, I'm going to be like Dikembe Mutombo from that Geico commercial where he's just swatting cereal boxes and other groceries in people's faces.
Yep.
No. Don't even talk to me about this. I can't. I can't emotionally get myself invested in something that has 0% chance of happening.
I need a guarantee of an extension to even consider a deal. That's the only way, and it's not happening.
And they won't
it's
get it.
It's not happening.
And yep. They won't get it.
So
they won't get
that's
it.
Where we sit. I know this season has been awful, worse than awful. It's been the worst season ever. It's been the worst season ever.
You know, we got bulls across our chest,
and I don't know what's going to change it, but doing this and turning into the New Orleans Bulls will not change where ultimately getting back to the finals and where we want to be as a fan base. This won't change it. It won't. And that's what I think I'm trying to tell you guys, and I'm not trying to tell you how to be a fan either. If you want Anthony Davis, more power to you, but it's not going to happen. That's where I think we're just trying to bring some clarity to some people. But yeah, I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. You can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line at 331-979-1369. We'll take your voicemails, your text messages on Anthony Davis, but I'm telling you guys right now, without a guaranteed extension, it's not going to happen. The Lakers, the Celtics have far better assets than the Bulls do. That's just the clear case here. But anything else you guys got for us, drop us your text, your voicemails. We do mailbag every single week. Wednesdays is committed to that. Drop those for us, 331-979-1369. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow for a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.